This is a podcast from the University of Manchester's Jodrell Bank Centre for Astrophysics. For the full show and archives, visit jodcast.net.
The night sky for February 2015. Looking south in the evening this month, we have a wonderful skyscape. Moving a little bit towards the west now is the constellation of Orion the Hunter. The three stars of his belt act as pointers up to the right, to the constellation of Taurus the Bull, with the Hyades and Pleiades cluster. On the 25th of the month, as I shall say later, the moon actually lies right within the Hyades cluster. Going down to the left from those three stars, we come to the brightest star in the northern sky, Sirius, Alpha Canis Majoris. Over to the left of Betelgeuse, which is the top left-hand star of Orion, and a red giant star, we come to Canis Minor. Just one bright star, Procyon, and a somewhat fainter star to its upper right. And Canis Minor lies below Gemini, the heavenly twins, with the two bright stars Castor above and Pollux below. Above Orion, and a bit up to the right of Gemini, is the bright star Capella, Alpha Auriga. A lovely arc of stars with some very nice open clusters, M37, M36, M38, all can be seen in binoculars from a dark site. And then rising from the east, we have the constellation of Leo the Lion. Like the lions in Trafalgar Square squatting on their haunches, and over to the right from its bright star, Regulus, Alpha Leonis, is an interloper. The brightest object in the sky in the evenings, apart from the moon, which is Jupiter, we'll come back to later on. So it's a lovely region of the sky to look at, and an area of the sky I really enjoy observing. What about the planets? Well, Jupiter reaches opposition on the 6th of the month, so this is a superb month to observe it, visible almost from dusk to dawn. At opposition, it'll be due south and so highest in the sky around midnight, its brightness peaking at about magnitude minus 2.6. In fact, just as I was writing this in January, I looked up at about 6:30 in the morning and saw Jupiter with a twin. But the twin was moving, the same brightness. It was, in fact, the International Space Station. They looked wonderful together in the morning sky. Jupiter starts a month in the extreme west of Leo and moves into Cancer on the 4th as it's moving westwards in retrograde motion across the heavens. The size of Jupiter's disk falls very slightly from 45.3 to 44.6 arc seconds towards the end of the month. And a small telescope will easily show the equatorial bands in the atmosphere and the four of the Galilean moons as they weave around it. Sometimes the great red spot is visible. In the highlights, I actually give a list of the times in the evening when the great red spot is facing us. Well, now Saturn. It's a morning object, rising at about 0300 UT as the month begins, but by about 0140 at its end. It lies in Scorpius, very close to the left-hand star of the fan that marks his head and claws. Its diameter increases a bit from 16.2 to 16.9 arc seconds, and it shines at magnitude plus 0.5. It'll be high enough in the southeast before dawn to make out the beautiful ring system, which has now opened out to 25 degrees, virtually as open as they ever become. If only it were higher in the ecliptic. Its elevation sadly never gets above about 22 degrees, and so the atmosphere hinders our view of this most beautiful planet. Mercury. Well, Mercury passed between us and the Sun, that's called inferior conjunction, on January the 30th. So it will not be visible in the pre-dawn sky until the end of the month. It reaches greatest elongation from the Sun on the 24th, but as the ecliptic is at a shallow angle to the horizon at dawn, it will lie only a little above the horizon, over in the southeast. Binoculars may well be needed to spot it, but please don't use them after the sun rises. Well, Mars has been in our sky for months now. It's moving eastwards relative to the stars, starting the month in Aquarius, but moving into Pisces on the 11th. It dims slightly from magnitude plus 1.2 to plus 1.3 during the month, as the angular disk falls slightly from 4.4 down to 4.3 arc seconds. It's about 100 times fainter than Venus, which is close in proximity, and best observed as darkness falls, low above the southwestern horizon, lying about 9.5 degrees up to the left of Venus as the month begins. But as February progresses, Venus moves closer until on the 22nd, they're less than half a degree apart. Given its very small angular size, no details will be seen on its salmon pink surface. Mars sets about 2 hours after the sun at the end of the month. Well, finally, Venus. It's now an evening object, setting some 90 minutes after the sun as the month begins, so shining at magnitude minus 3.9, it should be easy to spot above the southwestern horizon about 1 hour after sunset. Its angular size increases a little from 11 to 11.6 arc seconds during the month. It will appear as a small dot blurred by atmospheric turbulence. Between the 17th and the 26th of February, Venus and Mars lie within 2 degrees of each other. I suspect that due to its low elevation, its life will be split into a short vertical spectrum by refraction in the atmosphere. Well, what about the highlights of the month? Well, Jupiter is obviously the highlight. It's a great month to observe it. It's still high in the ecliptic, and hence when due south, at an elevation of about 55 degrees. So please have a go. And as I said, on the night sky page, there's a list of the times when the great red spot will be easily visible. At the very beginning of the month, 1 hour after sunset, about 6 p.m., Venus and Neptune lie very close together. Venus shining at minus 3.9, as I said, so very bright, but Neptune, magnitude at plus 8, relatively faint. A small telescope will probably be needed to spot Neptune, but it's certainly worth a try. They're closest on the first of the month, when Venus is 46 arc minutes, that's less than a degree, to the lower left of Neptune. Before dawn on the 13th, and looking east, a waning crescent moon will be seen just 3.5 degrees to the left of Saturn, which is shining at magnitude plus 0.5. On the 17th of the month, before dawn, looking southeast, a thin waning crescent moon will be seen 2.5 degrees to the left of Mercury. Between the 17th and the 26th of February, Mars and Venus, as I said, making a close pairing. By the 7th of the month, Mars lies 8 degrees up and a little to the left of Venus, as seen about 1 hour after sunset. But Venus is then rising rapidly in the heavens, and by the 17th will be just 2 degrees below. They stay within 2 degrees until the 26th, when Venus will be to the left of Mars. And the closest on the 22nd, when they're just 23 arc minutes apart. On the evening of the 20th, a thin waxing crescent moon will lie just 6 degrees to their right, a lovely imaging opportunity. When at their closest, Mars, far fainter than Venus, will probably be difficult to spot in Venus's glare, and so binoculars or a small telescope may well be needed to see them both. Finally, on February the 25th, the moon passes through the Hyades cluster, a very nice visual or photo opportunity, when the 7.5-day-old moon enters the center of the V-shaped Hyades cluster. After midnight, it will pass within just a few arc minutes of the red giant star Aldebaran, shining at magnitude plus 0.8. And I should point out that Aldebaran has nothing to do with the Hyades cluster. It's sort of an interloper, and lies roughly halfway between ourselves and the cluster. It's a good month to observe the heavens. It really is good. I hope you'll enjoy it.
Thanks for that, Ian. And for our listeners in the Southern Hemisphere, here's Claire Bretherton with The Night Sky Where You Are.
Kia ora, and welcome to the February Jodcast from Carter Observatory in Wellington, New Zealand. We are continuing to enjoy the fine, clear summer weather here in the Southern Hemisphere. But as we edge ever closer to the equinox in March, our nights are slowly beginning to lengthen and our days shorten once again. Stunning bright Venus holds its position low in the west after sunset this month, setting around an hour after the sun. Sitting slightly above and to the right of Venus is Mars, appearing much fainter than its planetary neighbour. Mars is slipping slowly down the sky before disappearing into the evening twilight by the end of the month. On the 22nd it will be just 0.4 degrees from Venus. On the opposite side of the sky, low in the northeast, is Jupiter, which will remain in our skies throughout the night this month, slowly moving east to west across the sky before setting in the morning twilight. Jupiter reaches opposition on the 7th, when it will lie directly on the opposite side of the Earth to the Sun, and so will be due north at midnight. This is also the time when the Earth and Jupiter are at their closest, and so Jupiter will appear at its biggest and brightest in the sky. Jupiter is currently in the constellation of Cancer, the Crab. This is the dimmest of the zodiac constellations, containing just 5 main stars, only 2 of which are brighter than 4th magnitude. It does, however, contain some other interesting objects. At the centre of the constellation and to the north of Jupiter is a lovely open cluster of stars known as M44, Praesepe, the Manger, or the Beehive. At magnitude 3.7, the cluster is visible to the naked eye as a hazy nebula, and has been known since ancient times. It was one of the first objects Galileo studied when he turned his telescope to the skies. Galileo was able to pick out around 40 stars, but today we know that Praesepe contains over 1,000 individual members, with a combined mass of between 500 and 600 times that of the Sun. As one of the closest open star clusters to our solar system, M44 is a great target for binoculars or small telescopes, which will easily reveal a number of individual stars within it. To the other side of Jupiter is the bright star Regulus or Alpha Leonis, the brightest star in the constellation of Leo the Lion. Regulus is at the top of an upside-down question mark, as we see it here in New Zealand, which marks the head and mane of the lion. With an apparent magnitude of 1.35, the star is the 21st brightest in the night sky. But it is in fact a system of 4 individual stars arranged in 2 pairs. Regulus A is a spectroscopic binary comprising of a hot, young, blue-white main sequence star with a tiny companion of less than 0.3 solar masses, which is probably a white dwarf. Regulus B and C make a second pairing, located 177 arc seconds away from Regulus A. Resolving the BC pair from Regulus A is a good challenge for binocular observers, and certainly achievable with a small telescope. A little below Regulus, and very low to the horizon at the beginning of the night, is another well-known double star called Algebra, or the Main. First discovered by William Herschel in 1782, Algebra comprises a yellow-orange giant primary and a yellow-white giant secondary at magnitudes 2.3 and 3.5 respectively. The pair have an angular separation of around 4 arc seconds, so you won't be able to resolve them in binoculars, but with a telescope of aperture around 8 centimeters or greater, you should be able to split them. Your best bet will be to wait a little later into the evening when Leo rises higher above the northern horizon. Leo is also home to a number of bright galaxies, including the Leo triplet, a small group of interacting galaxies consisting of spiral galaxies M65, M66 and NGC 3628. Often known as the M66 group, the Leo triplet is located around 35 million light-years away and provides a fantastic opportunity to study galaxy interaction in our local universe. Each of the 3 main members shows signs of tidal disturbance, with NGC 3628 exhibiting an impressive tidal tail extending for over 300,000 light-years. The triplet is located fairly close to Denebola, or Beta Leonis, the second brightest star in the constellation, and around halfway between Chiron, Theta Leonis, and Iota Leonis. Most small telescopes should be able to pick up the group, but M66, the brightest of the 3, should also be visible in large binoculars. Nearby is the M96 group, containing at least 8 major galaxies, including M95, M96 and M105. To the other side of Cancer in our evening sky is a third zodiac constellation, Gemini, the twins. The bright stars Castor and Pollux mark the heads of the twins, and they can be found in the north after sunset. Pollux, the brighter of the two stars, is the 17th brightest star in our night sky. It is about 35 light years away from us, whilst Castor is in fact a sextuple star system located 52 light years from Earth. Nearby to Eta Geminorum, at the foot of the twin of Castor, is the open star cluster M35. Under good conditions, it can be seen with the unaided eye as a hazy star, but binoculars or a wide-field telescope will reveal more detail and are by far the best way to view this lovely cluster. Wishing you clear skies from the team here at Carter Observatory.